Chapter 6, Bullet Ants. Jack entered the hotel room and took in his surroundings. The room was spacious and elegantly furnished, boasting a mix of Chinese craftsmanship and Western functionality. His king-sized bed dominated one side of the room, dressed in crisp white linens, while the other side housed a mini living area with plush leather armchairs and a glass coffee table. At the window stood a desk with an elegant wooden chair. With a sigh, he laid down on the bed. Inhaling the clean, filtered air that the climate-controlled room offered, he began to relax. Despite the city's significant strides to electrify public and private transport, the persistent smog had become an ever-present companion during his stay, obscuring the horizon and casting a gray pall over the city. While the emission reduction through the increasing adaptation of electric vehicles helped combat the city's air pollution, it was a minor drop in the ocean regarding the bigger picture. Industrial emissions from factories and power plants in Beijing's neighboring districts, often still fueled by coal, continued to release pollutants into the air. As the people continued to flock to the cities away from rural life and industrial activities grew, so did the challenges associated with pollution control. Beijing's geographical position with mountain ranges to its north and west further worsened the problem by trapping the cloud of smog over the city in case the wind conditions were unfavorable. Jack took another deep breath and got up. He could not allow himself to succumb to jet lag just yet. His first order of business was to get his devices up and running. He rummaged through his luggage, realizing he had overlooked packing a plug adapter in his hurried departure. Picking up the room phone, he dialed the reception and requested one. The staff was accommodating, promising an immediate delivery. While he waited, Jack decided to unpack his few belongings. His suitcase held the essentials: neatly folded shirts, two pairs of pants, his underwear, his toiletry bag, and his laptop. He arranged his clothes in the wardrobe and decided to take a shower. The warm water eased the tension in his muscles, washing away the day's stress. Once out of the shower, he changed into a clean set of clothes, feeling refreshed. In the small living area was a well-stocked minibar and an array of local Chinese teas. He settled for a jasmine green tea, savoring its aromatic and subtly sweet flavor as he sank into the plush leather armchair close to the large, panoramic window. He took in the breathtaking view of Beijing's skyline, punctuated with towering skyscrapers that glittered in the evening sun. It was a stark contrast to the bustle and tension of the day, offering a haven of tranquility. He surveyed the sprawling city below, and a sense of calm washed over him. But with the tranquility came sadness. Back home, his daughter was preparing for her 18th birthday, a milestone he had promised to be a part of. He picked up his private phone, his daughter's smiling face greeting him from the screen. Swiping to unlock it, he began typing out a message. "Hey, sweetheart, I just wanted to let you know I had to take an unexpected trip. But don't worry, I'll make sure I'll be back in time for your big day. Remember, I wouldn't miss it for the world. Keep being amazing and take care. Love, Dad." Pressing send, he felt a nagging sting of regret that his job kept him from home again. Jack's mind wandered back over what happened in his short time in Beijing. The enormity of the task ahead seemed amplified in his solitude, allowing him to mull over the dizzying revelations and their less-than-successful efforts to gain traction on the case. The encounter with Nick's corpse had shaken Jack more than he'd like to admit. The sight of the lifeless body and the gruesomely meticulous surgical details of the removed kidney disturbed him. Why would someone remove an already transplanted kidney from someone? Did Nick pay for an illegal kidney transplant and unknowingly signed his death sentence with this deal? If yes, this could take the investigation in a new direction, and he needed to let Officer Jung know. But could he fully trust him? His instincts told him so, but maybe his instincts betrayed him after years of being away from the front lines of international diplomacy. And then there was the standoff with Huang Guochong, a senior triad member as mysterious as he was dangerous. Their plan to misdirect him by suggesting Jack was an Interpol agent had been risky. Jack remembered the calculated silence, the uneasy tension that had hung in the air. They had gambled, hoping to scare Huang into giving them some information about the mysterious woman they suspected to be Nick's killer. But instead of falling for their bluff, Huang had remained impassive, refusing to admit anything, let alone help them. Their failed gamble was a bitter pill, leaving a taste of frustration and wasted opportunity in his mouth. There was a soft knock at the door as he contemplated his next move. The hotel staff must have arrived with his adapter. He was ready to plug in his laptop and start writing up the report of his first day for Laura. Maybe by typing it out, answers to the questions that bothered him would somehow reveal themselves. He opened the door. What the? Before Jack's brain had fully processed the situation, he instinctively reacted to a fist thrown at his jaw. Raising his left arm, he successfully blocked the first strike. He caught a second punch with his right arm, deflecting the raw force. The blows sent shockwaves up his arms, his muscles crying out. He retaliated with a swift uppercut that connected with the attacker's jaw. The man staggered back, a momentary confusion clouding his eyes. Then a second man plowed into him. He was a wall, pushing Jack back, the momentum throwing him into the room, crashing against the coffee table. Jack recovered quickly, caught his balance, and connected with a knee to the man's liver. With the attacker bending over and catching his breath, Jack spun around to face the first man again. The man threw himself at Jack with a wild fury of attacks. Jack countered the whirl of kicks and elbow strikes as best as possible, but began to tire out. A right hook, swift and brutal, crashed into Jack's ribs. He doubled over, a flash of white-hot pain igniting across his side, and dropped to the floor. His vision swam. Instinctively, he managed to land a forceful kick against the man's right knee. With a grunt, the assailant's leg gave way under him. As the man went down, Jack attempted a dash for the still open door, but before he could reach it, the second attacker jumped at him from behind and clenched Jack in a bear hug that caused both to fall forward. The plush carpet of the hotel room did little to cushion the fall as the man landed on Jack's back with his whole weight, pushing the air out of his lungs. Jack gasped. Before he could right himself, the other man landed on his legs. Together, they wrestled Jack down and zip-tied his legs. Still dizzy from the impact, Jack was hoisted up and bound tightly to the chair that had stood by the room's desk. Jack struggled against the plastic, its unforgiving bite cutting into his flesh. His heart hammered in his chest, his ribcage awash with pain. The hotel room was a chaos of scattered furniture and broken glass, the aftermath of their intense brawl. Jack looked at his captors. Huang Guochong's bodyguard stood before him, panting and bruised, but victorious. In the open doorway, a new figure appeared, silhouetted against the hallway lights. Huang surveyed the room. He curled the corners of his mouth as he took in the disarray. Strolling casually, he entered the room, slowly closed the door behind him, and navigated the minefield that was Jack's hotel room. "Mr. Decker," he began, his voice a tranquil contrast to the room's disheveled state. "I apologize for this unseemly display of force. I'm sure you understand that sometimes circumstances demand a straightforward approach. Judging by your bold plan this afternoon, I believe you are no stranger to this strategy." His eyes met Jack's. Despite his calm appearance, the threat was clear. He knew Jack's true identity. Jack's mind was racing. To buy time, he chose to be defiant. "If you know who I am, you know you have a big problem on your hands if you don't release me immediately. I am an active member of the U.S. Diplomatic Security Service Force." Huang looked around the room and chuckled. "Do I, Mr. Decker? You see, I am not fond of threats. When I am threatened, I tend to become irrational. It is a character weakness that I am working on." He gestured at one of his men and nodded toward an overthrown armchair. The man quickly placed the armchair upright in front of Jack. Huang sat down.
"Let me tell you a little tale."
His voice dropped into a more conversational tone.
"Some time ago, an aspiring competitor from Macau made a rather short-sighted decision to challenge my business. Have you been to Macau, Mr. Decker?"
Jack stared at Huang silently. Huang sighed and continued.
"That's a pity. Macau is an interesting place, full of opportunities. But it is also a hectic place, too loud and too brash and arrogant in its display of wealth. It tends to affect the minds of the people who live there, you see? They too become hectic and arrogant. I don't like those people. They are impulsive and often don't think their decisions through. In this case, a young man named Tan Lo, ambitious and too eager for his own good, believed his syndicate's reach needed to spread to our area. He had big dreams of building an empire on the ashes of those who stood in his path. He saw me as an obstacle, one that needed to be removed. So he started making threats, promised me he would bring down my operation and ruin everything I'd spent decades building if I did not hand over half of my business to him. He believed he had the manpower and the means to overthrow me. The thing is, he probably was right, but he was arrogant. Had he been wiser, I might not be sitting here. But Tan Lo's mistake was that he mistook my lack of immediate resistance for weakness. He took my silence as fear, my patience as submission. He failed to see that it was my job to know everything about potential threats to my business. So I let him continue with his charade, let him believe he was winning. All the while, I was gathering information about his operation, infiltrating his organization, unraveling his plans, identifying his weaknesses.
The corner of his mouth lifted into a smile.
People like Tan Lo see themselves as rebels and relish in the thought of controlling an empire by fear. That might work for a while, but they don't understand that we are all just businessmen at the end of the day. And a businessman needs to have his operations under control. So, once I pieced together the workings of his operation, I struck with precision. Within days, his lieutenants were either behind bars or dispatched. With his operational arms cut off and no revenue streams, his once thriving syndicate crumbled quickly. And today, it is nothing more than a memory.
Huang paused for a moment, lost in thoughts.
The reason why I am telling you this is so you understand two things about me. First, threats, whether big or small, do not faze me. Second, it is my job to understand the person that threatens me. So, I'd suggest that, for the purpose of this interaction, you tread very carefully. Like I said, I don't enjoy being threatened, and I enjoy it even less when it comes from an American who has no business interfering in how we run things here in China. That's why your audacity perplexes me. I advised you not to bother me anymore, and you turn around and pester my drivers about the same triviality? But was it a triviality, Mr. Decker? After all, what would be so important that prompts a former security officer of the U.S. Embassy to choose such a foolish attempt to trick me, us, the Ba Zha Hui? No, the matter at hand must be of high importance to you. That makes me curious. I understand you only arrived in Beijing this morning and have never met Officer Zhang before. So, either you are a very persuasive individual, or The woman that concerns you is so important that Jung agreed to play along with your little charade today. Which one is it, Mr. Decker? What happened that made you come back to China? After all, we have no quarrel with the U.S. or your embassy here in Beijing. What is so special about this woman that prompted you to threaten my operations? With a sinking feeling, Jack realized the miscalculation they had made. It's not them. Huang doesn't know about Nick.
How do you know who I am?
Jack asked in a deliberate attempt to give himself more time to think about how to get out of this. He was angry. He rushed into an investigation without fully appreciating the situation's complexity on the ground, a mistake he would not have made while he was still on active duty at the embassy. The years spent working in an administrative job behind a desk far away from the front lines seemed to have dulled more than just his physical agility. His instincts were off, too. Mr. Decker, we have an extensive network, and my memory is still sharp. As I explained, it is part of my job to learn everything there is about potential threats to our business. This includes knowing the profiles of key figures of the embassy employees stationed here in Beijing. When you walked into my office, I knew I had seen your face before. I just couldn't place it. It took me only a few minutes after you left to confirm your real identity and the position you used to have. So I ask you again, why are you interested in this woman? Every fiber of Jack told him that feeding into Huang's curiosity could cause things to spiral out of control. Revealing the reasons for his investigation would mean the Baja Hui getting involved. They, too, would try to find out why Nick's transplanted kidney was removed. From there on, it would get messy real quick. He remembered his years at the embassy, the delicate balance of diplomacy, where sometimes silence was the smartest move. He was banking on his status as a U.S. Diplomatic Security Service Force member. Surely Huang would not be so bitter over their earlier confrontation that he would decide to kill him. Jack remained silent. Their eyes locked. After what felt like an eternity, Huang finally broke the silence.
Very well, Mr. Decker, as you wish.
Huang shrugged his shoulders.
I'll leave you in June's capable hands. If you tell him why you are interested in the woman, I promise he'll let you be.
He stood up to leave. When he reached the hotel room door, he paused and felt for something in his coat pocket. He walked over to the bed.
My apologies, I nearly forgot this.
He placed a plug adapter on the nightstand. Huang nodded at one of his subordinates, and together they exited the room. The second guard, June, closed the door behind them from the inside. A silent tension filled the room as June turned his attention to Jack. The bodyguard smiled and pulled a thin metal object from his pocket. At first glance, it looked like a pen. But on closer inspection, Jack noticed that it was a small metallic tube with end caps covered in Chinese engravings too small for him to decipher. June removed his jacket, placed it over the chair in front of Jack, and rolled up his arm sleeves. With deliberate slowness, he uncapped the tube and pulled out two small syringes. One filled with a clear liquid, the other with an opaque yellow-tinted dispersion. He placed both needles on the seat across from Jack, walked by him to look out the large hotel room window, and went silent. Jack tried to maintain a semblance of calm. He twisted his tied-up body in the chair and turned his head around to see what June was doing. Huang's bodyguard stood quietly at the big hotel window and looked over the city. Jack tried to read June's face to anticipate what the man's next move would be, but the man's face was a stone mask, amplifying the palpable tension in the room. Jack took a deep breath, attempting to get his voice under control.
What's this? A truth serum?
Think of it as such, if you like, June responded without breaking his contemplative gaze out the window. Jack seized the opportunity while June was not looking at him directly. His fingers frantically strained against the zip ties binding his wrists, attempting to find any weakness, any slack. He twisted his ankles, testing each zip tie's resilience, scraping them discreetly against any sharp edge he could find on the chair. Every gained second was pivotal. Trying to keep June occupied, he continued.
You do realize those truth serums are myths, right? We've tested them all. They don't work.
Oh, I know. June's voice floated over, his silhouette framed by the evening sun illuminating the window. Jack's hands were still tightly bound, but he gained some movement in his left leg. He pushed as hard as he could against the zip tie, trying to use the leg of the chair as a fulcrum to leverage more force. Just when he felt a slight give in the binding around his ankle, June turned around. Jack stopped his attempts and watched June walk to the chair in front of him. June picked up the syringes and absent-mindedly twisted them in his fingers, as if he'd admired a great treasure. He held up the needle with the clear liquid. This one causes pain. He placed it on his right armrest. He held up the other syringe with the opaque dispersion. This one will make this pain disappear. He put the syringe on his left armrest and sat down. I will now inject you with a small dose in your lower arm. He gestured at the right syringe. 1 minute will pass, then relief. He nodded towards the other. Consider this an appetizer, Mr. Decker. Afterward, you will answer my questions. Otherwise, the cycles intensify. Each session will be injected into a new body part, each lasting longer with growing doses. Eventually, the agony might even make you snap your bones from muscle spasms. But it hasn't come to that yet. Everyone talks before that point. And why should this happen this time? All we ask is a little information. Once you talk, I'll leave you free and alone. Jack's mind raced. He grasped for a plausible alternative explanation regarding his search for the woman, but drew a blank. As June meticulously flicked the syringe, ensuring no air remained, Jack felt a surge of desperation. He wanted to shout and tell June to stop, but just as his lips parted, the needle pierced his skin, releasing the syringe's liquid into his system. Instantaneously, an unbearable pain flared up. A red-hot iron rod was being pushed through his arm. Jack gasped, his vision blurred, and sweat beads formed on his forehead. It felt like his nerves were set on fire, with waves of excruciating pain radiating up his arm. He was distantly aware of the sweat pouring down his face, of the sound of his heart pounding loudly in his ears. Every second felt stretched, elongated by the relentless pain. He forgot to breathe. Then, just as suddenly as it began, the pain receded. Jack's vision returned. He watched as June placed the second syringe back on the left armrest. Jack's heartbeat slowly normalized.
What was that?
He stuttered as he regained his breath. Have you heard of the bullet ant, Mr. Decker? It's a tiny insect native to South America. These ants have the most painful sting in the world. There is a native tribe in Brazil that uses their stings to initiate young boys into manhood, a barbaric way to transition into adult life. Luckily, we can be more civilized and purify the ant's toxin. What I have in this syringe is a concentrated Panera toxin solution. This makes everything much more controllable and more concentrated. June looked deeply into Jack's exhausted eyes. Now, since this was just an appetizer, let me repeat the question. Why are you interested in this woman? Jack grappled internally with the idea of telling June everything. If this had been a mere preview, the next dose could be unbearable for him. Nick's murder, the missing kidney, Jack's deeper motivations, he contemplated telling June all of it to avoid enduring the next round of a longer and even more agonizing torment. There was an unexpected knock on the door before Jack could muster the strength to speak.
Room service,
a muffled voice announced from the other side. Tell them to leave. June picked up the syringe with the Panera toxin for Jack to see. Attempting to hide the evident pain in his voice, Jack croaked,
I don't need anything. Thank you.
There was a silence on the other side of the door. Finally, the reply came.
All right, sir.
Jack heard retreating footsteps. June's gaze lingered on the door a moment longer, ensuring the disruption had left, then slowly returned to Jack. Suddenly, the hotel room door flung open. Jack's eyes widened in disbelief. Lei burst through the door with an agility and speed that caught June off guard. As he rose from his chair, Lei was already upon him. The taser he held crackled with electricity, and before June could react, Jung plunged it into the side of his neck. A violent jolt passed through June's body, causing him to convulse spastically. His eyes rolled back. Foam formed at the corners of his mouth as he fell, pulling Lei to the floor with him. They crashed into a tangle of limbs. Lei was quick to regain his composure. Reaching for his handcuffs, he managed to restrain the incapacitated June swiftly and efficiently. Once he was sure June wasn't a threat, he turned his attention to Jack. Rushing to him, he quickly sliced through the zip ties binding him. Are you all right, Jack? He asked, his eyes filled with concern. Jack, panting and still coming to terms with the turn of events, nodded weakly.
Yes, thank you,
he managed to say, his voice hoarse. Lei assisted Jack to his feet, ensuring he was steady.
How did you know I was in trouble?
Jack asked, his voice still shaky.
I had a bad feeling when I dropped you off here. Something didn't sit right with me. Call it intuition. So I contacted one of our informants within the Baja Hui to test the waters. He mentioned whispers about a foreigner about to be taught a lesson in respect today. I rushed back here immediately and asked the receptionist about your room number. She mentioned three men inquiring about your room just a bit earlier, and that two of them had left just a few minutes before my arrival. I got a master key card from the reception, rushed up here, and, well, you know the rest, Lei concluded, while looking at June's unconscious body on the floor. Still processing, Jack took a deep breath.
We were wrong. The Baja Hui weren't involved in Nick's death. Huang didn't even know that he was dead or why I am here.
Lei's eyebrows furrowed. You sure about that?
Positive. We rushed into that. Our mistake.
Lei considered the news. That may be, but Huang made an even bigger mistake going after you. I mentioned the delicate balance between us and the triads in Beijing. Huang disturbed this balance. Big time, he explained, a hint of frustration evident. His club, the Jewel Bar, it's being shut down as we speak. I made a call to the chief on my way up here. As for our friend on the floor, he gestured disdainfully towards June, he's about to get acquainted with life in an internment camp for resocialization. Jack let out a sigh of relief, the weight of the night's events slowly starting to lift.
Thank you. I'm sorry things escalated.
No, I have to apologize, Lei replied. My haste in judgment made us confront Huang in the first place. Had I given it more thought, this might not have happened. I'm just glad I made it in time.
Pausing, he looked Jack over.
Are you all right?
Jack massaged his arm, which was red and tender to the touch, but no longer hurt. He took a deep breath, reassuring himself that all his ribs were intact after the crash on the carpet.
I've been better, but I'm all right.
You sure about that?
I just need some time to rest, that's all, Jack replied.
Do you want me to arrange for transport? Get you settled in a different hotel, perhaps?
Lei suggested, glancing around the ransacked room.
Jack contemplated for a moment.
Huang is out of the picture, right?
A firm nod from Lei. He got the memo. You are not to be touched. He will stay away from you, Mr. Decker.
Jack glanced at the toppled furniture, then at June's motionless form sprawled out on the floor.
There's no need for another hotel. Another room might be nice, though. He chuckled weakly. And please, call me Jack. I'll have a word with the hotel management to ensure your new room remains a well-guarded secret. You'll be safe. You have my word, Mr. Decker. Jack, Lay corrected himself. As for him, he nudged June's leg disdainfully, backup's on the way to deal with him. Jack rubbed his arm as he looked at the handcuffed and unconscious body on the floor. Thank you, Lay. After arranging the new room, they agreed to meet up for breakfast. Lay left, and Jack, now in a new room several floors up, felt the night's exhaustion weigh him down. He ate a few snacks from the minibar and then tried to find sleep. After what felt like hours of restless tossing and turning, he got up. He grabbed the desk chair and wedged it securely beneath the door handle. The makeshift barricade in place, he once again settled into bed. This time, the weight of fatigue took over, and he drifted into a deep sleep.